This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. Welcome into the Gabe Kuhn Show. I am obviously not Gabe Kuhn, but I am Connor Dunning, former Memphis Tiger videographer, not offensive lineman, but videographer. You can find me at CDunning929 on X and Twitter. I'm also over on Blue Sky. Just search Connor Dunning and I should pop up. Gabe is currently out and will be out for a little while because he and his wife are getting ready to welcome a future Memphis offensive lineman into the world. So please, if you are listening, wish them the best of luck. We'll be running two-hour shows until the big man returns, and I will be joined by the Honorable King George, George Ruggiero. You can find him at Twitter, at KingGeorge94. George, what's up?
Man, what a Monday.
We've taken over the show.
We've taken over.
Successful coup.
I don't know how we did this. How did we get this much power?
Well, when you stack the two of us on top of each other, it equals one Gabe Kuhn, and we fight dirty.
That's
true. That is absolutely how we took over the show. But before we get into everything today, I got to set it up. We'll have Christian Fowler at 420 today, as we always do on Tuesdays. Titans radio voice Mike Keith will be joining me at 445, and then the great Jeff Calkins at 5 per usual. The Blitz is going to be at 520, and then we'll get out of here with small talk. But before we get into the Grizzlies absolutely dismantling the dreadful, dreadful Portland Trailblazers, George, you and I need to have a conversation about Gabe Kuhn.
Is this about,
and his activity last night while he is bedside with his wife who was about to go into labor.
Yeah.
I open up Twitter during the Grizzlies game.
As you do.
And what do I see? I see Gabe Kuhn tweeting about football. And was it Monday Night Football?
No.
Sunday Night Football. And was it about scores or running backs or quarterbacks? No. It was about pass and rush block schemes. Is that the most Gabe Kuhn thing of all time? Sitting bedside next to your wife who is about to deliver you your first child. And what you want to do is fire off some football takes.
It is the most on-brand thing I have ever seen. And I just pulled it back up to, you know, review this. It's very specific. It's only about one offensive lineman on the Philadelphia Eagles.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, I have a connection to this as well. It's Mekhi Becton, of all people, who playing guard now with the Eagles when, you know, as a former New York Jet with the Jets, he said, I will never play guard. I am not a guard. And all it is him pancaking people. It's not even about specific scheme. It's just, man, look at Becton doing some work.
Well, and you know, I texted Gabe when I saw these, and I was like, Gabe, you're not really tweeting about football right now. And he goes, well, I am watching Monday Night Football. Gabe, if your big ass doesn't turn on Housewives for Taylor, hopefully they're listening, and he can change the channel to Housewives or Vanderpump, Jersey Shore even. Don't make that woman watch football while she's about to deliver you your baby. I think that Gabe is viewing it as, you know how some people play classical music for the baby?
Yeah.
So they come out, they, you know, they're brilliant
cultured
children. They're cultured children when they come out of the womb. I think that Gabe wants this baby to pop out in full pass pro and be ready to hit the offensive line tomorrow. I think that's his plan here.
If that baby doesn't come out and immediately take like a slide step, you know, and just to make sure that they're not getting the false start on
send
them,
it back in. Not ready yet.
Not done cooking.
Not done cooking?
Nope.
Not done cooking. Speaking of cooking, though, the Memphis Grizzlies cooked the Portland Trailblazers last night. Grizzlies won 123-98, and the major story of the game was one Ja Morant returned to the court. And it is so apparent, as soon as he is out there, how different this basketball team looks. Because we've talked about it all year. I think the Memphis Grizzlies are really good this season. And even when they don't have Ja Morant, I think that they were able to stay afloat with Jaren Jackson Jr., Desmond Bane, even though he was out for a while. Their depth has allowed them to pick up some wins here when Ja was out for those eight games. When he's out there, this team turns to good to great. And I think that they have an actual chance of contention. He was phenomenal last night. In only 23 minutes, Ja Morant had 22 points, 11 assists, one block, and he was plus 22 out there. He was getting to the free throw line, knocked down a couple of threes. Ja Morant's three-point shot is something to keep an eye on this year. But, you know, every single time I watch him play, I tell myself, I don't think I've ever rooted for a player like this before in my life. None of my teams have ever had a human highlight reel walking around constantly. When he has the basketball in his hands, you have to watch or you're going to miss something.
It is truly must-watch TV. And I'm going to bring this up to you because I was on Jason and John this morning, and Jessica Benson joined us, uh-huh. And she specifically said that she believes, and I tend to agree right now, that Ja Morant is the biggest show, maybe not the greatest player, but the greatest show in the NBA right now. Because for what it's worth, I've also been working these last couple of Grizzlies games, and this was the first game with him in the lineup that I've worked. And the energy in the building between even games where the Grizzlies are getting big wins, beating the Sixers last week, you know, the return of Embiid, the return of Maxey. I understand that's the game in which Paul George got injured, which is an absolute shame for them. But, and there was great energy for that game. But with Ja Morant in the lineup, the building was electric.
Yeah. It's different.
On a Monday evening, mind you.
It's different. It's different. When he's out there, it's completely different. The city of Memphis, we've had some exciting players in the past. Like that year that they had Derrick Rose on the Memphis Tigers, you could feel the electricity in the city. But I think that was probably, you know, before Ja, that was probably the last, like, truly exciting, high-flying speedster type of guy that they've had on a Memphis team. And I really do think if he can stay healthy, first off, I agree with Jessica. He's the best show in the NBA when he is healthy. Some people might try to make an argument for, well, LeBron doing this at 39 is still impressive. Sure. And Wimby, he's an alien. Any single night he can drop 50 and 20. Sure, that's a show. But when Ja has the ball in his hands, it feels like anything is possible. Jaren Jackson Jr. had a great quote recently when he was talking to Zach Edey. And he was talking about Ja Morant. And he basically told Edey, you have got to expect the unexpected when Ja has the basketball. The last thing that you think is going to happen when Ja has the ball in his hands is his first thought. That's his first thought. So you have to be ready at all times because, as we've seen, Edey's dropped a couple passes here and there because he's just not ready for them because it's coming from nowhere. The way that Ja is able to make plays elevates this team so much. And what I have enjoyed this season is last night we got one high-flying dunk, and he joked about, well, that's my one of the season. But it does feel like he has tried to make it a point to get his teammates involved. His assist numbers are really up this year, and he's going assist first, scoring second. That's what I've liked from Ja Morant. But I want to talk about somebody else, not just Ja Morant. Someone who is playing at, in my opinion, an all-star level. I think he might be playing at an all-NBA level, which may or may not cost the Grizzlies about $300-plus million here in the offseason, but Jaren Jackson Jr. currently has the lowest foul rate of his career while playing the most minutes of his career. And with Jaren at center, and we're kind of basing this off of just hype because technically Brandon Clark has been running the five when you actually look at the roster and the lineup, but when Jaren's been in there with Brandon Clark or Santi Aldama or somebody else that is smaller than him, the Grizzlies are a plus 15.1 per 100 possessions and have a 102.6 defensive rating and rank in the 69th percentile, nice, in defensive rebounding rate. Jaren Jackson Jr. this season is averaging a career-high 22.9 points, 5.6 rebounds, 1.3 steals per game, career high, 1.7 blocks, and he is shooting a career high 52.4% from the field. He is currently leading the Grizzlies in points, steals, and blocks. Last year, you know, was a lost season for the Grizzlies. It truly was. But in that darkness, you were able to find a few bright spots. One of them was G.G. Jackson. One of them was Vince Williams Jr. One of them was Scottie Pippen Jr. The biggest one to me was Jaren realized, I'm a big MF-er. These people can't stop me. And I've got dribble moves that bigs shouldn't have. I can shoot in a way that most bigs can't. And he has become devastating in ISO. Teams can't do anything with him. It is so valuable to the Grizzlies that when Bane's out there, Jaw's out there, Jaren's out there, you have three guys who can create their own shot. You've got three guys you can throw the basketball to and say, go get me a bucket. Go get me a bucket in a big moment. Jaren's leap the last few seasons has been for real. And I hope all of you out there that ever said a cross word toward Jaren Jackson Jr., I hope you feel shame today. I hope you feel shame, because that's what you should feel. Jaren Jackson Jr. has been phenomenal for this Grizzlies team. He's actually been the most healthy Grizzly over the last few seasons, too. I have been so impressed by his play. I can't wait to see where he goes from here. Now, next up, we've got to talk to BCM's Christian Fowler. Because I don't know if you saw this, but yesterday they took down number two UConn. So stick around right here on 929 FM ESPN. Christian Fowler's next. Welcome back to the Gabe Kuhn Show on 929 FM ESPN. Every single Tuesday, Christian Fowler takes some time out to join us on the show, and we're going to do it again right now. Christian Fowler, you can find him on Twitter at CFowlerBCM, and he's a senior writer and content creator for Bluff City Media. I like to call him the Tigers and Cowboys expert, and he's here today to talk to us exactly about that. Christian, what is up?
Nothing much. How are you doing, Connor? It's the first time we've gotten to do this.
I know, no, man. Gabe. George and I have had a coup on the show. We've completely taken over. I do want to ask
you,
Gabe, soon to be father for the first time.
Yeah.
Do you have any advice for him as someone who does not have a child?
that's funny. Do I have any advice as a non-parent? Let's see. I've recently seen my best friend and my sister both have children over the past year. So I would say enjoy sleep when you can, because from what I've seen, it is few and far between. So those moments when you get to breathe easy, when you get to rest a little bit, say it's a night that maybe the in-laws or someone's watching them for you, it just soak all that in, because I've seen a lot of sleepless nights over the past year in my family.
That is great advice. I'm thinking that I'm probably going to see Gabe up here at the studio a little bit earlier than he usually comes in, you know, to maybe catch a nap. And also, we have to talk about this. George and I opened on it. It was one of the funniest things I saw last night. Did you see last night, Gabe? He is bedside with his wife, who is about to go into labor, and he is tweeting about Sunday night football on a Monday night, and he is also tweeting about schemes that they are running. He's talking about pass pro and stuff like that. Is that the most Gabe Kuhn thing of all time, yeah, to be sitting bedside with your wife about to have a child, and he's like, I got to fire off this lineman take?
100%. That's what I was going to say. I was like, I hope you're not shocked by him doing that.
No,
because
not
that is 100% something that maybe only Gabe Kuhn would do. Literally about to have probably the most impactful moment of your whole entire life, and you still got a fire off analysis. Like, that is Gabe Kuhn as a human being in a nutshell right there.
I'm going to be highly disappointed if that baby doesn't come out and pass pro. I need just, you know.
It's got to.
Yeah.
Kickstep right off the rim.
Exactly. All right, let's jump into it, though. Last night, or yesterday, during our show, Memphis had a massive upset over UConn. I'm going to start off pretty hot. Is this the biggest win of Penny Hardaway's career?
I say almost unequivocally yes, and I think he even said it in the post-game press conference that it was the biggest win of his career. And it's pretty hard to argue, because what else is outside of that? Yeah, you've got a tournament win, you've got a couple conference championships. So he's gotten some good wins. He's gotten big wins over ranked opponents in the past. Houston, Tennessee have both been like marquee wins in his career. But it's not the back-to-back defending national champions that have basically dominated college basketball over the last two seasons. and to be able to do it in the manner that they did. And to me, this was the most shocking part about it. I think probably the vast majority of Memphis fans, when they're watching that game, you feel great at halftime. Like, it's tied up. You're playing the number two team in the country, and you're matching them shot for shot. And then you build a lead in the second half, but then it's kind of like the inevitable, not if it's going to happen, when does it happen? Mm-hmm. And it does. UConn comes storming back. They send it to overtime. And I would imagine there were very, very few Memphis fans that were like, okay, we're going to go into overtime with UConn and pull this out. But for them to stay through that moment and to stay locked in, to show that the moment wasn't too big, and to end up pulling that out in overtime, to me, was the most impressive part. Like, say they just blow them out of the water. Okay, they wired to wire them. But they had to overcome some stuff, and they really had to stand the test to win that game. There was a lot of fortitude from that team to be able to take the comeback, go into overtime with a team that has the momentum and is one of the best teams in the country, and then somehow outlast them in overtime.
Right. I think that because the four games that have kind of been in the mix for Penny's best win, you have 2019 at number 19 Tennessee, 2022 NCAA tournament against Boise State, which, you know, I understand why some people are choosing that one. But to me, you know, that was Boise State round one. Then you had to meet Gonzaga later on. I'm not sure that would be my choice. The one that I understand why people may be choosing is the American Athletic Championship game in 2023 against number one Houston. My argument right. against that one would be you were probably going to make the tournament whether or not you won that game. So I don't know if I want to throw that one in. It is very clearly to me.
And I think, was Jamal Shedd out for that game? Am I mistaken by that?
I can't remember. He may have been.
I could be.
Sasser was out for that game.
Okay. I knew somebody was out for that game. Okay.
And let's ignore the people that were missing from number two UConn yesterday. But no, that's we tell our own story here on 929 FM ESPN.
Yeah, exactly.
But the circumstances around the game, though, are why I think it's the biggest one. Not only did Penny dismiss some of his friends and most of his staff before the season began, it's a brand new roster. Nicholas Jourdain is the only holdover scholarship guy from last season. It's a brand new team. They've had some early season success, but it really felt like yesterday they proved to not only, you know, the Memphis fans, but I think the rest of the nation that this team might be for real. And to your point, winning that game in overtime without P.J. Haggerty, without Nicholas Jourdain, and after you allowed them to rally back, hit a big three, didn't foul up three, the mix was there for a classic Memphis loss after, you know, you felt like you were going to get a big win, and it just didn't happen. It felt like a turning of the tide of sorts for Memphis basketball.
Yeah, and I think that's honestly just a microcosm of this team because they're kind of breaking Memphis trends that we've seen. And yes, I understand. Like, I'm not going to get deep into this. It's a small sample size, so I don't want to go overboard by saying it. But just historically, especially over the last several seasons, like, Memphis has been a bad free throw shooting team. Memphis has been a bad overall shooting team. Memphis has been a bad three-point shooting team. Memphis has been a team that turns the ball over a lot, and the turnover-to-assist ratio is not great. And this team, at least through five games, has really bucked all of those trends. Like, that is not the case with this team whatsoever. I don't know if they still are, but last week they were number one in three-point percentage. I would assume they're still right there after shooting nearly 55% yesterday. And I saw that they were number two in overall field goal percentage. Like, that is not the Memphis that we're used to seeing. And so just overall, they're bucking a lot of trends. But I completely agree with you. It's a new team. It's early in the season. If there was ever a time that you could lose a close game to a highly ranked team and say and feel good about it and say, okay, that's good for our prospects this season, it was yesterday. But they didn't. They didn't lose the game. They pulled it out. And it's something that I'm sure anyone that's a Gabe Kuhn Show listener, or especially you, Connor, you listen to us every week, we have said since probably March or April that this team had to get on campus early, and Penny accomplished that. He got these guys on campus early. The chemistry is clearly there, and I think that's one of the things that helps more than almost anything else that you can't measure, right? There's no statistic for chemistry. There's no statistic for how long a team has been playing together, and them getting there early, even though it's a month or two, has made a drastic difference compared to what we saw last year when guys were still filtering in throughout the late off season and into the season and things got shaken up. That's not the case this year. They've been on campus and they know each other. They know each other's play styles, and it's pretty obvious to see.
Absolutely. It feels like this team has a clear pecking order, or at least all the guys have roles already early in the season, where last year, you know, and the years before that, it always felt like with that platoon rotation he would have, guys weren't getting consistent minutes. They couldn't figure out what their roles were. So I totally agree with you. Getting these guys on campus early, allowing that chemistry to build, and I think that having those two exhibition games against legitimate basketball teams, not just, you know, eating against the worst teams in the country, I think that we have seen the effects of that throughout the first five games, because the Tigers have pretty much had to show up every single game. They haven't had an easy win yet, and they've been able to perform. And talking about that team chemistry, I want to go ahead and move on to PJ Haggerty and Tyrese Hunter. Where do you think this combo ranks as a backcourt in the country? Because so far through five games, it feels like they may be one of the better ones.
Yeah, I think it's hard to question that they're up there. Top 10, top 5, top 15, they're somewhere in that range, right? They're one of the best backcourts in the country. And it's hard to argue that, especially at this point in the year. You look at what P.J. Haggerty has done just from a scoring standpoint, the consistency of his scoring, his free throw shooting, his ability to get to the free throw line. He's drastically changed, what Memphis typically does, much in the same way that Kendrick Davis did. It kind of helps them slow the game down a little bit, get a better feel for it, get into a rhythm more quickly. And then with Tyrese Hunter, I think he is like the perfect Robin to the Fat Man, and that's not a knock and that's not a negative at all, because P.J. Haggerty is obviously the number one,
right?
Like, he is going to be the leading scorer of this team offensively in more games than not. They're going to go where P.J. Haggerty goes. But the hope for Tyrese Hunter throughout the offseason and into the season has been P.J. Haggerty's not going to be perfect, right? He's going to have his off games. He's going to have games where he's not able to affect the game as much as a scorer, and you need someone to supplement that production. And P.J. Haggerty showed in that game against UConn, 27 points, 7 of 10 from 3 in that game, that he can be that guy. If he has to be that guy and be the leading scorer for this team, he can do that. And we know what else he can do, just as far as a facilitator and moving the ball and making the offense flow, which I think he does an incredible job of. He can also, if he has to be, your number one scorer. So I think they complement each other perfectly. And that's more important than anything else, because you can have two really good players in the backcourt, but if their styles clash, or if they both want to be the number one, then it doesn't matter how talented they are. It's not going to work out. But clearly what you have is two extremely talented basketball players that are perfectly fine with their roles, that are perfectly fine with complementing each other, which are fine with deferring to each other to get a better shot. It's so far this season, it's been a match made in heaven for P.J. Haggerty and Tyrese Hunter.
Absolutely. I think one of the biggest differences with the team this season versus last year's team is it felt like everything had to run through David Jones. If you needed a bucket, you had to throw it to David Jones. If you needed a playmaking,
right,
you got to throw it to David Jones. Really, if anything was going to happen defensively, you had to hope that somebody poked a ball free. They weren't really moving together. What I noticed yesterday during the game, I described it as, defensively, it looked like they were almost moving as a flock of birds. Like, it was like flowing like water. It was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Jay Billis kept pointing it out, but Tyrese Hunter was the head of that snake. He was leading by example, and I think it is so important that they have guys in there already that are taking those leadership positions, and they are leading by example. The Tigers, just to be quite honest, I'm not putting this on David Jones, they just didn't have that from anybody else last year. And not only do they have that defensively, I think offensively, they're able to score at different levels with different guys. Like, Dane Danger last night deserves a ton of credit. He had 14 points, 7 of 10 scoring, and when they need a bucket, sometimes they just throw it down to the big man and say, hey man, go get a bucket.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was about to say too, is like, don't look now, but here comes Dane Danger. He was their leading scorer in the San Francisco game. Like you mentioned, he had 14 against UConn, so he's averaging 16 over their last two. And if you get a tertiary scorer at this point, if you get a third guy in that rotation that can lead you in scoring, like it's like this team becomes more and more dangerous as the games go on, because we've seen Colby Rogers have his games where he's been really good too, including
right,
the UConn game.
Yeah.
Like it,
3-6 from
they,
three.
They can exactly. They continue to grow as a team. And there's something you said a couple of minutes ago that I think encapsulates it better than anything else, and that's just their overall fit to their roles.
Mm-hmm.
That is one of the most important things in basketball that's not talked about enough. Is like, if you have a team that doesn't understand what they're supposed to do or doesn't feel like they fit in the role that you have them in, then you're going to have chaos. And I think that's a lot of what we saw last year. And I think everyone would agree. Just the clunkiness of the team last year versus the smoothness of the team this year, just like you're talking about, the way that they move in sync defensively and offensively. We saw that at times last year, but it was very small spurts. And it's like from jump this year, they have been in lockstep with each other and been in sync. And I think a lot of that goes, A, to leadership, which you mentioned, like just having veteran guys that have been around that are okay with not being the number one. It's huge. But then just fitting roles and having the coaching staff put them in the correct roles for them to succeed, accepting those roles and then excelling at those roles. That's what makes a good basketball team, and that's what we're seeing right now. We're not seeing anyone try to play hero ball. We're seeing guys that are playing together, that are getting open looks. That's why the shooting percentage overall is so good for this team, is because they're okay passing off to get open looks. It's not a bunch of ISO ball and let's see how many points PJ Haggerty can score tonight.
Right.
No, let's move the ball. Let's get open looks. Let's get good shots. Let's turn defense into offense again, which is what Memphis has been known for over the past few seasons, or really in Penny Hardaway's tenure, but not necessarily last year, and they're clearly getting back to that. And it just feels like a very well-constructed roster that is playing very well and in sync together.
Yeah, it's, you know, Penny has talked about it before, but he always has wanted to emulate what Houston basketball has done. You know, have those hard-nosed defensive guards that can also put the ball in the bucket whenever they want to. And it feels like this year's team is pretty close to that. So, you know, I think that they've done a great job of building the roster with guys that are going to be defense first, but can also go get you a bucket when you need it. Now, moving on real quick. So Penny Hardaway is now 3-1 versus Hurley in his career. And yesterday was a all-time performance from Hurley. Should we call it that? Was it shameful? Yeah. Was he a clown out there? What'd you make of it?
So I started covering the Memphis basketball team in 2018, which was Penny's first year. And I believe that was Hurley's first year as well, if I'm not mistaken, or at least early in his career at UConn. And that is one of the probably the first 10 or 15 games that I ever covered for Memphis. And so sitting on press row where I sat was at the end towards the away bench. And obviously I hadn't been to many games at that point. Like I said, we're probably 5 or 10 games deep into the season at that point, home games that I've seen opposing coaches. And normally there's nothing to write home about, but I remember sitting there and hearing the things that Dan Hurley was saying and just his mannerisms and his, I guess just the way that he freaked out about everything. Like I've still never seen a more animated coach. And so to see it on TV is one thing, but like to be sitting 3 feet away from the guy and hear everything, I don't even know how he coaches 30 something games a year. I don't know how he has a voice for the rest of the year, because he is the most animated man I've ever seen. So it's not surprising to see that the way that he was against Memphis. And then he comes out after the game, and I think he said it was basically due to the refs that they lost, and there was a bunch of crappy calls in the game, and it's not surprising. And I'm not crapping on Dan. Like, Dan Hurley is an incredible coach. I mean, he's won back-to-back national championships, but if you've never seen it before, it's quite shocking. And if anyone can ever get close to him, like if anybody can ever get a courtside seat for a UConn game or be close to the UConn bench, do it. Like, spend the money, do it. It is a straight comedy show. It made that 2.5-hour game go by in 30 minutes, because I don't even know how much of the actual game I watched. I just kind of focused in on Dan Hurley the whole time. You could probably, if someone dug back 6 years on my Twitter, I guarantee you 95% of my tweets from that game were about Dan Hurley. Like, it is it is comedy. It is a live comedy show with him on the sideline.
We need a Hurley Muse account to hit
yes.
Twitter soon. I have a lot of respect for Dan Hurley. I think he's probably the best basketball coach in the country right now, now that Coach K is no longer in there. But I was disappointed in his post-game comments, because
me too.
It wasn't the referees. Listen, there were some calls that were questionable, but I could also say the same thing on the other side. Memphis was driving to the rim. They were forcing contact, especially Haggerty. He didn't necessarily have it from the field, but he was forcing contact in the middle. UConn was taking a bunch of threes. They were taking a bunch of jump shots. They weren't getting down into the paint like Memphis was, and that is why I think you saw the difference in free throws. At the end of the day, I think he should have given more credit to Memphis, because he would say, like, oh, you know, Memphis is a great basketball team. I think that they're underrated, while in the same breath being like, but the refs gave it to him. And it's like, oh, come on, man. You got beat.
Yeah.
You got beat for the first time in, I think, 938 days on a neutral site court, which is just insane. Insane.
Yeah, and like you're talking about, that always goes both ways. And I understand, like, the frustration with refs, especially in college basketball. College basketball is the worst ref sport that I've ever watched. It is maddening to watch college basketball. I think so many times they're just guessing what's going on, it feels like. But it does go both ways. Like, it's all – you could go peel back through a whole game and say, they probably missed 7 calls this way and 6 calls that way. Like, it's never just targeted at one team. The only time I really understand going off on the refs is if it is a blatant, horrible call that determines the game in that moment. But other than that, like, it's going to be called bad. More than likely, it's a college basketball game, and you're going to get some calls, and the other team's going to get some calls. And you know, as a college basketball coach, that you just take that as it is. Like, you kind of have to just battle through that. And obviously, it hasn't been a problem for UConn over the past couple of years. So I don't understand why in this game you lose and then it's on the refs. I wasn't a huge fan of that either. Like, Memphis should have gotten more credit for stepping up to the plate, because they weren't massive dogs in this game. I think it was like 8.5 or 9 points.
8.5.
But still, like, no one expected Memphis to win this game, even on a neutral site court. So a little bit more respect should have been given for Memphis. And I always go back to Kelvin Sampson. Like, he is the king of giving credit when he is beaten. Like, he's never going to blame someone else. He's never going to cry about officiating or something like that. He is, well, he might, but he'll in the same breath give credit to the team and not blame it on an outstanding circumstance, you know? So I think that's the way to go. You got to give credit. When you're beaten, especially as a team like that, you've got to give a ton of credit to the opposing coach and team.
Absolutely. Now, we're up against it, so you're going to get a little bit lucky. I'm not going to make you talk about the Cowboys too much, even though you're coming off of a pretty exciting win. But I've got to ask you, did you see Jerry Jones's recent comments on Mike McCarthy and possibly giving him an extension over the summer?
This is the most insane thing I've ever seen. I said this last week. I didn't want to win any more games. Like, this was like a lose out and get best player available in the draft. And here they come against the Commanders, and it's just this wonky clown show of a game, and somehow pull it off. And it's like, we don't need to be winning games right now, guys. This isn't going to do anything. This is not a playoff team. This is a bottom of the barrel team right now. And then for Jerry to come out and say something about extending Mike McCarthy is just absolutely absurd. Like we've 6-10 in his first season with injury to Dak, and then it was 12-5, 12-5, 12-5, which is really good. I mean, 36-15 over 3 years is great. But there's no postseason success, and it's clearly not coming down the barrel. And there will be people, probably very few, but that say, well, this is a lost year. Dak got hurt. No, no, no. This team was terrible before Dak got hurt. This team wasn't going anywhere this year anyway. It was a dumpster fire. You bring in Mike Zimmer, who's not been coaching for the last several years, was with Deion in Colorado, like somehow in an off-the-field role. So you bring in a DC that's done nothing over the last couple of years. Your defense is horrible. You don't make any adjustments on the offensive side of the ball. You try to do the same exact thing, and it's just not working. Like, it's become stale. It's over. Like, there should be no Mike McCarthy contract extension. It should be either you do it during the season or you do it after the season, but him being fired should not be a question. There's no way that he makes it out of this season, and if so, like, I really might not be able to watch next year. It is maddening to be a Cowboys fan right now.
How about them Cowboys? He is Christian Fowler, at C Fowler BCM on Twitter. Christian, have a happy Thanksgiving, my friend. I'll talk to you next week.
You too, brother. We'll see y'all next week.
All right, that was Christian Fowler. We will be back next with the radio voice of the Tennessee Titans, Mike Keith. Stay right here on 929 FM ESPN. Out, so I am sitting in. Connor Dunning sitting in for Gabe Kuhn. And right now I'm joined by Mike Keith. He is the radio voice for the Tennessee Titans. You can hear him every single Tuesday with us at 4:30, and you can find him on X Twitter at Tennessee Voice. Mike, how are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you.
Do you have any advice for our soon-to-be father, Gabe Kuhn, before we dive into the Titans?
Yes. Don't ever complain again for the rest of your life.
Seems fair.
Because what's going to happen is you're going to walk in and your wife's going to say, "How are you?" And you're going to say, "I'm tired," because maybe you're tired. Well, trust me, you're not as tired as she is. When she asks you when you walk in, "How was your day?" Don't ever say your day wasn't anything other than fantastic, because she's going to be able to top you with whatever bad happened. The dad part of this is you're just the guy. Mom is the really important person here. You're just the guy. And so the way you stay out of trouble is you don't ever complain ever again. I went through it with my first child, and then 4 years later with my son, who was born 26 years ago tomorrow, as a matter of fact.
Oh.
I never ever complained. Ever. I had always had plenty of sleep. I was never tired in any way, shape, or form. My days were always good. You don't open the door. And obviously, you're always available to help every chance you get, because this is not about us. This is about Mom. And that will be the real story forever, because when my son gets home from California tomorrow, who's he excited to see, Connor? Mom. Who's got him a refrigerator full of food? Mom. Who's got his bed ready and everything ready to go for him to be able to enjoy a wonderful trip home? Mom. I'm just some guy. 26 years later, I'm still just some guy. And that's what a dad has to learn first and foremost.
Amazing advice. We'll make sure to clip this and
Thank
send
you.
It off to Mr.
Please.
Gabe Kuhn. But now we got to dive into the Titans, and they picked up a big win over the rival this weekend,
yeah.
You know, the Houston Texans. And before the season, it was really interesting because Gabe and I were trying to do our NFL predictions, standing predictions, record predictions, and both of us were pretty bullish on the Titans. We thought that they were going to be a scrappy team that could maybe claw their way to 7 or 8 wins. And early in the season, it didn't appear that team was there. The defense was playing really well, but the offense really could never get going. It has seemed that recently, in the last 4 weeks or so, they're 2-2. Are they beginning to turn a corner offensively?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the corner's been turned offensively. I think they're beginning to turn a corner as an overall football team.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're figuring out what it takes to win. I think they're having fun. I was with a bunch of Titans players earlier today. Jelly Roll, who you've probably heard of.
Of course.
Did a big event, and a lot of the Titans players came because they're great supporters of his. And, just talking to them, they're up. They're excited. They're ready to get back to practice tomorrow. They're ready to start getting the preparations underway for Sunday's game in Washington. They're acting anything like a 3-8 team would be at Thanksgiving, because now, after all these things that have gone wrong and them making 3 to 4 big mistakes a game, they've started to figure it out. They're playing together. They know what their coaches want. They know what their teammates are able to do. They understand the offense and the defense. The pieces are starting to fit together. And so they're having fun. And we saw it in the game at Los Angeles against the Chargers. They didn't win, but they were certainly very competitive. It got a bad call at the end of the first half, which sort of changed that game. But you're like, okay, I mean, you can see it. The Chargers are a better team, but you can see it a little bit. Of course, Connor, nobody wants to hear that when you're losing.
Right.
And then they play the Vikings, and everybody starts to get a little peek into this. It's funny. I was talking to a couple of my friends who are Vikings fans, and they're like, you know, your team's coming on. There's some things. I mean, you can sense it. Titans fans said the same thing after the Vikings game. And then to go win in Houston against the division leader, you make mistakes, but you overcome them because you're able to do some things better than they are. And I think that's what started to happen for this football team.
Absolutely. And I think the biggest thing that's happening for this football team is Will Levis is playing better. Since October, he is number one among the 2023 draft class in passer rating. He has 97.4. Bryce Young is actually number two at 83.5. C.J. Stroud at 81.2. And Anthony Richardson at 68.9. And then I saw an interesting stat. So Will Levis now has technically, he has played 17 games in his NFL career. So they're saying that it's kind of the equivalent of a full rookie season. He has 3,200 passing yards, 18 touchdowns, 13 interceptions, 62.2 completion percentage. With his play recently, do you think it has changed the way the Titans are thinking about this offseason, specifically when it comes to quarterbacks in the draft?
So let me just say what I would have even said 3 weeks ago, and that is no. And here's what I mean by that, Connor. I don't think they're going to make any decision on that till the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think they want to see it in its entirety. And now what I think he's done is he's raised the stakes dramatically because you understand what he can do. You're starting to see the potential you thought was there. And so now how does that translate? You know, does he build on it? Does he come through and make a few things? Does he have some game-winning drives? Do you start to see and what he's been doing since he came back is he played in Los Angeles and he was better. And then he went out against the Vikings and he cut out some of the mistakes that he had in Los Angeles. And then in the game at Houston, he did some good things and cut out some things that he had done in the game against the Vikings. Can he continue this growth? This is what the people inside Ascension St. Thomas Sports Park have believed that he could do all along, and they want to continue to see it. So I don't think the narrative has changed internally. I think they're going to continue to watch and grade and really discuss. And I think at the end of the season, they will come to some sort of conclusion. Do they pursue a quarterback or do they feel like Will Levis can be their guy going forward? But I thought that back at the end of October, and I think the same thing now. Nothing that he's done changes my perspective about what's going to happen. It's just some of what they have thought and they have believed is what he's showing the people on the outside over the last three games.
Right, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the arm talent is absolutely there. He makes some throws that you're just like, wow, that was, you know, he let that thing, he uncorked that thing down the field. I think with Will Levis, it comes down to decision-making. That's what it is. Mm-hmm. Can he take care of the football? Can he get rid of the football when he needs to? I don't know if you know this, but he is the first QB to be sacked at least seven times in multiple halves of a season since Randall Cunningham with the Eagles in 1986.
Right.
And, you know, when you first hear that stat, you think to yourself, oh, well, the offensive line must be struggling. But then when you go back and you look at the tape, three or four of those sacks are just because Will Levis isn't getting rid of the football, and he's kind of running into the defender. So I think if he can figure out his decision-making and be a little bit more consistent with his play on the field, it could get interesting in that Titans front office this offseason.
Well, and here's something that's interesting, too, about the sacks. So three of them were actually on plays where he chose to step up in the pocket and he was going to try to run, and then he got tackled for a yard loss, a 2 yard loss. That's still scored as a sack. But that's what he had been coached to do, because what they're talking to him about right now is, listen, if it's not there, tuck it, run it. Don't take an 8 yard loss. If you get through that first wave and you pick up yardage, great, but don't lose a whole bunch there. Don't throw it into coverage. So some of this, while, I mean, 8 sacks sounds like he's just being buried consistently.
Right.
And that really wasn't how it was. There was another sack where Danielle Hunter ran him down going right to left 45 yards, and it ended up being a loss of 1 or 2. But he was going to run the ball. And, again, scored a sack. When you think of sacks, you think of Lawrence Taylor coming off the edge, or, you know, Khalil Mack, or one of the Bosa brothers, or, you know, one of the Watt brothers coming off the edge and sack, fumble, big play. You know, there are different qualities in that. And his recognition. Now, you take the other four sacks where he was hit in the pocket, two of them are probably on him. So all of this is still the learning process. And what they're trying to teach him, what they're trying to get across to the offensive line as well, that, okay, we need to help him in this way. It's about communication. He's still got a lot of growth, Connor. I mean, there's still a lot that has to happen. The offensive line still has a lot of growth. Mm-hmm. The receivers are still trying to figure out exactly what you do in certain situations in Brian Callahan's offense. So it wasn't like he got just waylaid. I think his total loss on the sacks was only like 32 yards. It looks bad on the tape, or on the stat sheet, I should say, but the tape tells a little different story about where he is.
Right, and you just mentioned wide receivers right there, beginning to figure it out in this offense. How awesome has Nick Westbrook-Akina been in the last six games?
It's been great, and he's such a good dude, and you know, the Titans fans are pulling for him so hard because he's a popular player. He was an undrafted out of Indiana and made the team as a special teams player. And he's made a lot of big plays for the Titans over the years. He's actually got 300-yard receiving games in his career, which would surprise a lot of people because he hasn't caught a lot of passes. But he's caught a lot of touchdowns. And now he's in this sort of defined role. I shouldn't say sort of. He's in a defined role. And Will's using him. And Tyler Boyd's healthy. He had six targets, six catches, 55 yards. And obviously Calvin Ridley's turning out to be a big player to the point that after five catches for 93 yards, Houston started double teaming him, Connor. I mean, they decided we're not going to let him beat us. And, oh, by the way, here's what happens. We throw a normal pass to Chigakonkwo, and there's nobody there to tackle him because they're busy worried about Ridley, and he ends up going 70 yards for a touchdown. This is what an offense does.
Right.
It's been a while since we've had one. We had one from 2019 through 2021, and this is what happened. Nick Westbrook-Akina was part of the 20 and the 21 offenses where he made plays. I don't think he's necessarily a two in terms of the physical talent, but he is a two in terms of his know-how and his reliability, especially when you put him with a true number one like Calvin Ridley. And you think about basketball, right? And you think about backcourts. If you've got a two who's an incredible shooter, then the role of the one becomes slightly different. And that's how receivers are too. And now that the Titans have a true number one, I think it's really exciting to see what they're able to do around them. And you have to start with Nick Westbrook-Akina.
Absolutely. Mike, this is great. Thank you so much. I will talk to you next week, and happy Thanksgiving to you and your family.
Happy Thanksgiving to you and everybody in the Memphis area, and wishing blessings and all of the good stuff for Gabe and his expanding family. It's wonderful news.
Absolutely. Hopefully, maybe they'll end up being a future Tennessee Titan offensive lineman. Maybe you'll have a Coon out there soon.
And maybe I'll last long enough for him to get here. That'd be great.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, that was Titans radio voice Mike Keith at 10Voice on Twitter. We will be back next with the great Jeff Calkins here on 929 FM ESPN. Stick around.